Okay, welcome everyone. Being 6:30, I would like to open this meeting. So we'll begin with our opening statement. Council acknowledges that we meet on the traditional lands and waters of the Paramank and Kaurna people. They are custodians of this ancient and beautiful land, and so we pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We'll care for this country together by ensuring the decisions we make will be guided by the principle that we should never decrease our children's ability to live on this land. So we have a number of apologies tonight. We have Councillor Huxter, Councillor Osterstock and Councillor Pascali. I'm just noticing a bit of a mess over there. So three apologies. We also have a leave of absence, Mayor Wisdom, which was approved back in April. We have no one absent. So before we proceed any further with our agenda, we need to endorse the minutes of the previous meeting. Councillor Herman, you're happy to move as printed. Someone like to second that? Councillor Cheetah, all those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. Do we have any declarations of conflict of interest for this evening? Councillor Selwood, we'll begin with you.
Thank you. Yes, I have a general conflict of interest at item 12.1. I haven't got the name of the item here. The Recovery Ready Halls grant. The nature of my conflict is that I'm a volunteer with one of the proposed groups, and my husband has indicated an intention to join the management committee but has yet to attend his first meeting. Due to our close ties with that group, I intend to leave the meeting for that item.
Thank you. So Selwood and Councillor, a mental blank mudge, sorry. Didn't get much sleep last night. Kids.
I have a conflict, a general conflict of interest with item 12.1 as well. Mm-hmm. So looking at the room, we may struggle to get quorum, but
we'll be fine at that stage.
Yeah. Recovery Ready Halls grants. One of the applicants, the Upper Sturt Hall, I wrote a letter of recommendation for. So I would consider that to potentially have shown my hand as far as supporting that particular applicant. So it wouldn't be appropriate for me to stay in and be a decision maker on this particular item. So I will leave the room.
Thank you. Any other conflicts of interest? I would like to declare a general conflict of interest myself with item 11.1, the motion or notice that I've brought to the chamber. The reason for my conflict is that this is to do with community groups, and I've had some involvement in trying to formalise a group in Bridgewater called Activating Bridgewater. There is no formal group that exists at this stage, and I believe that I can remain fair and impartial in my decision making for that item, so I intend to remain in the chamber and vote if required. Yes, Councillor Mudge.
Thank you for reminding me of that one. I would like to also declare a general conflict of interest on item 11.1. Bringing community groups together. I am also involved in one of the community groups which could potentially benefit from this. It's not actually a formally incorporated body yet. So similar to Councillor Daniel, I believe that I can put the general interests of the community ahead of any personal interests I have in that group, and will remain and vote.
Thank you, Councillor Selwood.
Yes, I'd also like to declare a general conflict of interest at item 11.1. I'm a member of two community groups that could be beneficiaries of this motion, but I am not on the management committee of either of those, and I'm just a paid member who has no involvement in the group, so I believe I can make a decision and stay in the chamber.
Thank you. All right. No more conflicts of interest. We'll move on to item 6, presiding members' opening remarks. The only point I really want to make is it's pretty exciting that we as a region and as a council get the opportunity to welcome Country Cabinet here tomorrow and on Thursday, and we look forward to engaging with them to talk to them about our challenges and opportunities. I think it's fantastic that they're taking the time to come up and hear what we have to say. Okay, moving on to item 7, there are no questions adjourned and there are no questions lying on the table. Item 8, we have no petitions and no deputations scheduled. We have time for a public forum, although I don't enter. Would anyone like to speak to the public forum? No. So moving on to item 9, presentations. We do have a presentation this evening by Ms. Catherine Ward from the Department of Environment regarding the Gawler River flood management business case. So if you'd like to come forward and take us through your presentation. Yes, thank you. Just there's a little button at the front which will activate the microphone. And you'll have 20 minutes and then time for questions if necessary. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me. And I will just straight up say I apologise for my appearance. Small allergic reaction this afternoon, but I'm otherwise fine.
No need to apologise.
So thank you for having me today. I also want to give my apologies for Kate Hart, our Executive Director of Environment, Heritage and Sustainability in the Department for Environment and Water. Kate had, unfortunately, a couple of conflicting appointments today and was sorry she couldn't be here for this particular presentation. I also want to acknowledge Ian Baldwin, who's behind me, Chair of the Gawler River Floodplain Management Authority, and I'm here presenting on behalf of, a combined joint effort in preparing the Gawler River Flood Management business case. So some of you may recall Kate Hart and myself were up here about 12 months ago. So for those who are in the chamber then, we presented a little bit about what we're doing. And this is a bit of an update on where we're at. So this starts at right at the beginning. What's the problem with flooding? And works through what we propose to do in terms of flood management going forward into the future. So the problem statement that you see on the screen there was developed in partnership between government and non-government stakeholders, yourselves involved through the Floodplain Management Authority. The three dot points there are the three key problem statements that were brought to the forefront and agreed by all stakeholders. The obvious one at the top being that during high rainfall events, runoff from the catchment, so from the Adelaide Hills area and the Barossa area, flows into the rivers and floodwaters can breach the banks of the Gawler River, North Para and South Para rivers. The issue there being that it can cause damage to crops, residential properties and infrastructure services throughout the catchment and the floodplain. The image you see there on the screen is the Northern Adelaide Plains floodplain. And predominantly I show this image because one, it fits nicely on the slide, and two, a large proportion of the flooding impact is seen on that flatter floodplain at the bottom of the catchment. The second main problem that was agreed to was the fragmented responsibilities for floodplain management do currently impede our ability to plan and implement effective holistic responses to flood. And by virtue of doing what we're doing here today and through this business case, we are starting to address some of that fragmentation. The third dot point there is the pace of change within the region is making it difficult for us to have consistent approaches and expectations amongst people who are affected by flood. You'll see at the bottom of the slide, there's an estimated average annual damages sort of forecast over the next 100 years. Currently, we're estimating the annual average annual damages from flood to be just under $40 million in this catchment and floodplain. And over the next 100 years, and it's a long time to project growth over, but we're seeing that more than double. So the rapid pace of change throughout the floodplain, urban development, horticultural expansion is really being quite impactful. I wanted to acknowledge that as well as planning for the long term and looking at sort of those long term solutions as part of our business case, we have been investing in four short term projects. And each of the councils, again, through the Gawler River Floodplain Management Authority, have been contributing to these. The first one there is some works around the Hillier Fireground rehabilitation in the town of Gawler area. That was removing some potential flood debris and doing some river condition rehabilitation. Carmelo and Park Roads drain is in the city of Playford area and is a local stormwater drain upgrade between Old Port Wakefield Road and Port Wakefield Highway. The third one is probably the most exciting and impactful across the whole catchment, and that's improving our flood forecasting and warning capabilities throughout the catchment. The image on the screen there is a brand new monitoring station that's gone in on the North Parra River. And we have improved or installed new monitoring stations at 11 sites throughout the catchment, including in the South Parra subcatchment. And that is nearly a 50% improvement on what was currently there. These monitoring equipment will enable us to better model water that is coming off the catchment through the rivers and be able to provide flood forecasting to all of the potentially affected residents and businesses throughout the catchment and floodplain. The fourth one there is a river survey and levee repair project that predominantly impacts the councils of Light, Town of Gawler, City of Playford and Adelaide Plains, where as the Gawler River starts to narrow in its channel capacity at the downstream end, levees become a really important tool to use in reducing the flood risk for the Northern Adelaide Plains. All of these projects are feeding into our longer term strategy, in particular that third and fourth one there, where we're using flood forecasting to reduce our emergency response. And also levees become a really important part of our infrastructure solutions going forward. So one of the questions we get asked a lot is about climate change and how we're including climate change in our forward projections. So we have included a high emissions scenario to 2090 in all of our flood modelling. And you'll see the picture on the slide there is a reasonably frequent flood modelled event. So 20% annual exceedance probability, roughly equating to a 1 in 5 event. On average, the North Parra, South Parra and Gawler rivers can rise by up to around about 35 centimetres, up to as high as 50. And water levels on the floodplain, particularly downstream of the rail line that crosses there and Old Port Wakefield Highway, up to about 20 centimetres on average, more like 5 centimetres. So we're seeing a general increase in all the water levels. Now, moving forward into the future, one of the key things we wanted to agree on not only was the problem statement we were looking to solve, but the objectives we want to achieve in the end. And the objectives there on the bottom of the screen, the most predominant one that all stakeholders agreed to was changing the physical flooding characteristics in the impacted region. But in doing that, to deliver solutions which for which the flooding consequences are acceptable to all users. There's obviously multiple uses and users across the floodplain and catchment, and it's hard to balance everybody's, you know, wants and needs. So we wanted to deliver solutions that did, you know, the best fit for all, but also to look at integrated water management solutions. So things that consider the environment as well as water use, as well as businesses, horticulture, agriculture, residents, that sort of thing. And then really fundamentally across the board, we wanted to increase people's awareness of flood risk and their preparedness for flood events, and that be something that everybody does for themselves and that governments can do together for their communities. So last year, when we came out to speak to you, we talked about the options that we're exploring, and there was an options analysis phase to our business case work. We looked at in excess of 30, 40, 50 options, and using that problem statement and long-term objectives that we'd identified, we shortlisted those down to a number of structural physical options and non-structural options that would help us achieve those objectives. The options that most fit at that time were levees and an expansion to the North Parra Flood Control Dam and planning controls. Now, the levees option needed a little bit more definition because levees can be in lots of locations and perform in lots of different ways. So our next phase of, I guess, technical investigations has fleshed that out a little bit more into what we mean by levies. There are a couple of things that were discounted as standalone options, and notably there, the flood awareness and preparedness campaign on its own doesn't provide the benefit for its cost, but it is something that's really important to investigate as a complementary option to infrastructure. So having a really aware community is a lot more, we've seen it in the eastern states, it proves to be a lot more resilient in terms of response and bounce back after a flood event. So it's a really important element to include alongside other things. So this year, we have been doing a fair bit of work to explore, I guess, what was shortlisted last year in our options analysis and further explore some of these potential options. We wanted to understand what was technically possible and feasible from an engineering point of view. We wanted to understand better the costs and the benefits in a monetary sense, so we can understand what makes economic sense. And we also wanted to understand from a benefits that, you know, can't be as easily monetized, what some of these options provide in indirect and intangible benefits. We explored 8 different options, some of them stand alone, some of them combinations. The combinations there on the slide, E through H, are all combinations that include an increase to the North Power Flood Control Dam wall height, as that was the one that came through the first options analysis as the most likely and most cost-effective and efficient option to proceed with. I'll note that on this slide, pretty much all of the infrastructure options require an expansion and upgrade to, I think I've got a pointer here, an upgrade to those green highlighted existing levees. It's really critical because the river starts to decrease in capacity as it goes downstream, that any upstream hard infrastructure, so up here at the dam, also considers how this area performs down here. So you get benefits throughout the whole system. The planning controls isn't one that's easily mapped without making that previous map look very messy. So this is just an infographic to give you an idea of some of the planning controls that we modelled. Now, these are theoretical planning controls because we know that there is an upcoming code amendment to the planning and design code for the flood hazard overlay. And we also know that regional plans are being consulted on. So we're looking to work with planning and land use services and councils to push what could potentially be planning controls a little bit further than what has traditionally been done with regards to flood hazard. So we've looked at the 0.5% AEP flood event, which is a 1 in 200 year event, and looked at using 30 centimetres, which is currently the threshold used in the planning and design code, looked at above and below that threshold, and used what we call strongly restricted, weakly restricted, or not restricted at all. Strongly restricted does mean that, you know, urban development could still go ahead in areas prone to greater than 30% or 30 centimetres of inundation, but that there would be pretty strong controls that would need to be engineered around that to make sure that residents didn't flood in those kinds of events, so raising floor levels, for example. And some of those may be practical and some of those may make developments not as cost efficient in certain locations. This map gives a general idea of some of the potential new development areas over the next 100 years that may be affected by those planning controls. But there's also infill areas within that flood extent that would also be impacted by those planning controls. Again, this map is focused on the floodplain for visual fit to the slide. But it is important probably to point out that in doing all of the work that we have been doing, we have noted that what is currently missing in the Gawler catchment is really up-to-date hydrology and catchment modelling that covers the whole catchment. So being able to flood model from the Adelaide Hills and Barossa topper catchment all the way through to the floodplain. At the moment, we have a number of different models that we sort of have to paste together and they don't cover the whole catchment. So that is something that we are recommending going forward so that we can better model this for the whole catchment, not just the downstream floodplain. In terms of cost-benefit analysis for the different options that we looked at, This gives you a present value benefit cost, net present value and benefit cost ratio. I like to just zoom in on that bold benefit cost ratio line. We're looking for positive benefit cost ratio and I guess the highest benefit cost ratio in terms of picking one that makes sense from an economic standpoint. Looking at that slide, I'll point out a couple of things. One is that for any dam raise option, we can also add an option to build in some water security. The idea there being that we could harvest water from the flood control dam in years where there's water behind it and it's engaged, pump that up to a storage and have it available for use to, at this stage, we've sort of planned for the Barossa region, but it could be at use for any of the upper catchment area. I will note that that, because it's a traditional flood control dam, does mean that in some years it's completely dry and there's no harvesting potential. In other years, obviously, it's in flood and there's lots of harvesting potential, so it's not a secure source of water. The other thing I will point out is that the options that have the highest benefit cost ratio are the ones that include a dam rise and planning controls. And the reason for that is they do address the largest scale in terms of geographic area, but also temporal scale. So the planning controls enable us to look into the future and control where we're putting things so that it is of less risk to flood. In terms of selecting a preferred option, it's important to point out that all options we've investigated do leave a residual flood risk. So we're not removing all flood risk throughout the catchment and the floodplain. And this is where building in an option that has the community awareness element to it starts to really stack up. Where you've got a community that's aware of their flood risk and prepared, you don't have that complacency that infrastructure is going to solve everyone's problems. So we've learnt from other jurisdictions like Queensland, who've got larger dams in their upper catchments, that where people see large infrastructure go in, they feel like, I don't need to do anything, I'm fully protected. That may not be the case, and it certainly won't be here. So really important that we continue to educate our community about flood risk. The beauty of also building this into long-term options is that it will benefit the whole catchment and floodplain, not just those who are in the Northern Adelaide Plains area, but those who might be intermittently affected by local stormwater flooding and more localised flooding events, so people will really start to get aware about what they can do for themselves. We've also looked at the environmental impact of our infrastructure options, and while they're not included in the economic analysis, because it's a little bit tricky for us to monetise those at the moment and we're still working on that, all of the options have some environmental impact, but in all of our capital costs we have allowed an amount of money to remediate and make good in other locations, I guess, to balance that environmental impact.
Selena, you know you've got about 3 minutes.
Okay, I'm nearly there. I did say before that there were other additional benefits that were outside of the benefit cost ratio. This slide just gives you a snapshot of that for the dam rise planning controls and awareness campaign. One of the biggest ones I'll draw your attention to is that our economists have estimated that up to just over $330 million over the next 30 years would be saved if we implement a flood awareness campaign, and saved in the sense of social costs, so mental health, family violence, and general resilience in our community that may not otherwise be there after flood events if not for an awareness campaign. So that's a really important additional benefit that we could get from quite a small investment upfront. In terms of how much we think building a dam, doing planning and doing awareness would cost, there are direct costs associated with the dam in excess of $100 million plus some annual operating costs. Built into that is an amount in this dam designed to redo all of the hydrology and catchment modelling. The levies will cost around about $30 million, and then an awareness campaign is around about just over $700,000 per annum across the catchment and floodplain. So it's not a small cost, but again, on the benefit to cost ratio, this does give the best outcome. The option for water security can be added into this for an additional cost of $7 to $10 million, and it does provide some benefit back for that as well. Stormwater management plan, I think you would have heard about the stormwater management plan before, and it's important to acknowledge the work that the Gawler River Floodplain Management Authority are doing in that regard with each of the councils, including yourself. And to point out that from a flood perspective, the stormwater management plan and the business case are heading in the same direction, and our two projects are talking to each other frequently. But that the stormwater management plan is a bigger thing than just the flood management business case. So it will take into account things like stormwater quality, river condition, integrated reuse of stormwater, those kinds of aspects that a flood management plan may not traditionally take into account. So they will work in tandem into the future together. In terms of what's next, we do have a little bit more technical work to pull together the business case. We're at what we're calling a draft stage. So over the next 4 months, we'll pull together the remaining functional detail, focusing mostly on the dam option. We'll finalise our cost estimates and get them peer reviewed, so they're as close as what we can possibly get to at this stage in terms of accuracy. And we're working through consultation with councils like yourselves over the next month. We'll also work to engage with some of our non-government stakeholders, so large developers, horticultural industry, that sort of thing. And then I'm run out of time, but the one thing I will draw your attention to is opportunities to keep an eye on, and that is the Disaster Ready Fund Round 2 opening in January, around about January 2024. And that's something for us to keep an eye on and potentially think about what works we can put into an application for that funding round, the hydrology and catchment modelling being one of them that I would recommend.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Councillor Mudge, then Councillor Grant.
Thank you for coming to present to us tonight. It was a very interesting presentation. I've got two questions. One is, and maybe I was sort of drifting a little bit, but the floodway, I think it was the Northern Floodway that you mentioned. Can you explain what that is and where that would go if that went ahead? And I'll give you my second question as well, and it's just in relation to the $100 million of funding that you mentioned. Where is it anticipated that that would come from?
Easy questions.
Totally easy. I'll start with the first one. So unfortunately, I don't have my spare slides at easy reach, but I can provide you a slide that shows you exactly where the floodplain goes, and I can send that to Pam and she can pass that on to you. But roughly, it started downstream of Old Port Wakefield Road on the northern side of the river and stretched over Port Wakefield Highway and for a couple of kilometres towards the downstream end of the river. It essentially provides a flood out zone where the river can sort of basically spread out, and it operates between a number of levees. It does require a levee system to be built to build the actual floodway itself, and then an upgrade of all the existing levees upstream of that to make sure it works properly so the water gets channelled into the floodway. The reason I kind of stopped talking about it halfway through that presentation is based on a benefit cost ratio, it doesn't stack up from an economic sense. It has a positive BCR, but it's nowhere near as good as some of the other options. The reason being is that it doesn't benefit, it pretty much benefits the downstream of Old Port Wakefield Road part of the floodplain versus a dam that has benefits across potentially 4 to 5 council areas. So that's where that one is. In terms of funding, that is a next step for us. So the business case will require us to put forward a proposed funding model for review by Infrastructure South Australia to get their, I guess, assessment of that, and for Treasury to consider what we're proposing. I'm not planning to solve that by myself. So my executive director and I do plan to come around and have meetings and discussions with each of the 6 councils on that. The disaster ready funding is Australian government funding. It's done on a 50-50 basis, so 50% co-contribution from the applicant and 50% contribution from the feds. That's our best starting point in terms of how you'd fund something. There's couple of $100 million a year over the next 5 years through that fund spread nationally. We would suggest that we take bite-sized pieces of our project over the next couple of years and put it up into each round. So we'll see how we go. We have to wait for the applicant guidelines to come out to see what the period of in-kind is. In this year's first round, we were able to claim anything spent in the prior 3 years. If that's the case, we will have spent just over $1.5 million on developing this business case, which could prove an excellent in-kind contribution for round two's application, which would mean initially no additional request for funding, but we have to wait for the Fed's application guidelines to come out for that. And then longer term, the dam, in all of our modelling, isn't being forecast to be built for another 10 years. So we've got a bit of time to find the other $100 million.
Just a little bit. Councillor Grant.
Yeah, thank you, Acting Mayor. Thanks for your presentation. A couple of thoughts. Firstly, I noticed your use of models to predict rainfall seem to assume incremental increases in rainfall as a result of climate change. I spent a little bit of time up in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales last year after the flooding there. The thing that we probably all learnt from that was that extreme events, and I went to one locality that had 800 millimetres in a single day. So assuming incremental increases is probably faulty. Second point is, one thing they learned there was big engineering solutions don't tend to fix this problem. Some of it probably made it worse. It looks like you've got a lot of engineers designing solutions here. Ideally what they needed was a myriad of small containments higher up the catchment. And of course you already have that in the form of dams on private property, but you don't seem to have countenanced that. But catching water higher up in the catchment and having those dams at part fullness with low flow diversions and things might be a way of actually containing the water rather than having a monstrous dam that either stops it or it doesn't, and eventually it doesn't. The third point is the early warning.
Do we have any questions?
Have you considered
I was going to reframe it for you, but you can do that yourself.
Have you considered those two points and the early warning things? Have you considered having them high up in the catchment so that you actually do have warning the day before? And the final thing is there has to be some preparation for inundation, and that's the other thing, that you're on a floodplain, it's inevitable. And I think pretending it can be stopped, wouldn't you say, maybe delusional?
Have you considered those thoughts?
That's a lot of considerations.
Well, yeah, yes. You don't have to answer them in full. You can keep it brief. We've got a couple of minutes before we need to move on.
Yeah, so in terms of the runoff and the hydrology and how we account for climate change, I will acknowledge that that is a moving feast in our profession and how we account for that. So our technical standards at the moment, Australian rainfall and runoff, are being, I guess, revised as to how we incorporate climate change into our modelling. We acknowledge that. So we've used the current standard. We know it's not perfect, and that's why we're making the recommendation. The first next thing you do is, once the technical standard's been updated, is to redo your hydrology and reconsider that to make sure that we're at the forefront of what best practice is. So that's one thing. The other, in terms of, dam storage throughout the catchment and using lots of small pieces of infrastructure, we know that throughout both the Adelaide Hills area and the Barossa area, we've got prescription for water resources. So we generally know where farm dams are, and we know volumes, and we know what's prescribed and what's not. We also know that there's not a lot of regulation around farm dams, and if you've been watching the news in the last couple of years, we have had some near failures across several farm dams. They in themselves cause us an emergency response, issue. And so having lots of little ones does, spread out the emergency management that needs to be done. It also spreads out the need to make sure that we're across the condition of all those dams. So there's pros and cons to making one big one or lots of little ones, both from a water security perspective but also an infrastructure management perspective. From a technical perspective, we ruled out having two large-ish or mid-sized flood control dams in series, one after the other. The reason being that that's not best practice to do from a technical point of view. One big dam, from an engineering point of view, works better than two in series. So we're exploring all of those options, and I'll absolutely agree with you, there's no one solution, and that building infrastructure is not the only solution. I strongly believe, this is my personal opinion, that spending a bit more time working on our hydrology and our catchment modelling while we do good flood awareness as the first thing is probably the best first place to take that big bite in the next round of funding. I'll also say that we've had a few goes at getting flood awareness funded by Australian government and state government, and we're not yet successful. So we're hoping this business case will be that next big tick. But for sure.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It's very informative. Very short question, because we have had 10 minutes of questions already.
Shane may remember that all of the people post and ask for $100,000.
If you can just turn your microphone off for the recording, thanks.
Yeah, sorry. We were approached for $100,000 for a $600,000 project. We generously contributed 10,000, didn't quite reach the level you wanted. Where did you cut? You still went ahead with the project, so where did you cut $90,000 out of it, or how did you fund the project? Could you just quickly explain that?
And by memory as well, the other councils only ended up chipping in 50, so they would have lost, the business case would have been about 260 instead of 600. If you can keep your response brief though, thanks.
So we're proceeding with the project and focusing on the dam wall expansion as our preferred in the short term option to explore in more detail. All other options will be explored at a concept level, so we won't be spending any more money developing, for example, the Northern Floodway or the awareness campaign. We'll use the concept level of information we've got to finish the business case.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we'll move on to questions on notice, of which Councillor Selwood did have some questions and was provided with a response. I understand Councillor Selwood has a couple of follow-up questions. I'll allow them to occur now instead of being asked in questions without notice, given the information's in front of us.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor. My supplementary questions from the responses. The first one is that the consultation report dated on the July 2022 states that, and I quote, respondents were told at this point in time that opt-out would receive approximately 80 cents per square metre to maintain their playing surface. I'm just wondering what the rate per square metre is that's being used to calculate the funding.
Through the Acting Mayor, thank you for your question. So the rate per square metre where we've landed at this point is approximately 55 cents a square metre.
Thank you, and one more if I may.
Sure.
Some groups have said to me in the last 24 hours that they are unclear on the start date. Has that been clearly communicated to the groups?
Through the Acting Mayor again, yes, our club support officer has been in very regular contact with all of the clubs regarding the new leases and the conditions they're in, and there's been regular discussions about handover and so on, so they're being progressively done as clubs are ready, so they won't be pushed into any particular date. We have to make sure that we're ready and they're ready, so we have been communicating.
Thank you, Ms. Cummings. Okay, moving on to item 11.1, motion on notice. As I did with the previous motion on notice when I was in the chair, I will move the motion as printed in the agenda, but I'll reserve my right of reply so I'm not leading the debate. Would someone like to consider seconding? Councillor Gill, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think this is a long overdue motion. We have so many community groups who all struggle to sort of get funding, work out fundraising activities that are profitable. And I think there have been some that have been better at it than others. And so to have that shared knowledge across all these community groups would actually be quite beneficial. One that I'm particularly proud of is the Houghton Oval development. They've managed to actually get quite a bit of funding through some of their activities without having the need to have fireworks and things like that that are actually destructive to the environment. So hopefully they can participate in this and share that knowledge onto some other well-known activities in our hills community groups.
Thanks, Pauline. Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Selwood?
Can I actually ask a question of the administration?
Sure.
So I was just wondering how the administration would interpret community groups. For example, would it include the Woodside Commerce Association, of whom Love Woodside is a subsidiary, or would it include the Charleston Recovery Response Group, which is a subsidiary of the Charleston Community Association? Just wondering how that will be interpreted.
Yep, no, I'm happy to answer that question because I did have some conversations with the administration about that. I guess the overarching intent are community groups that are, I guess, contributing to the engagement of community as a holistic sort of approach to a precinct or a township. I wouldn't necessarily limit it to a particular, whether it's associations or Imagine Your Adler or something like that. I think the administration will sort of work through the different groups. For example, Love Woodside is the subsidiary. I 100% would see them being involved. Whether it goes, I don't see it specifically going to, just sporting groups. I see it more as community groups that are trying to contribute to that local area as a whole in bringing the community together and sort of progressing what that community care about. That's my take on it. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Grant?
Thank you. Acting Mayor, can I ask a question of, sure. of the mover?
Mm.
This speaks in the singular and inaugural gathering. I wonder if that's deliberate and whether that's a little impractical if it was going to be a single gathering of all the community groups or whether the administration would simply find it the best way to do it, whether it be a number of gatherings.
From my perspective, it is bringing the community groups together in one event and then seeing what comes out of that. So point four, reviewing how it goes, and then perhaps we do, and I don't want to sort of foresee things too much, but perhaps we do find that they want to have subgroups of particular types that get together. Perhaps it's a regular six-monthly catch-up where they share. I'm not sure. I don't want to sort of dictate that, but I do see this as an initial inaugural event and then seeing what comes from it. Councillor Parkin.
Thank you, through you. I just wanted to follow on from Councillor Selwood's question about how we identify community groups. I think even sporting groups would see that they were giving a huge contribution to parts of the community and beyond, and I'm wondering if we should leave it to the community groups themselves to self-define whether or not they want to come. I think otherwise you start to have issues where, why wasn't I invited? So from my point of view, I think we should allow people to decide themselves whether they're a community group and throw it open to everybody. But I think it's a wonderful initiative. Again, well overdue. I look forward to attending and I support the motion. Thank you.
Yeah, just in response to that, we do have hundreds of community groups in our council area. So yes, it's correct. It's a very broad term. Go to the background where my focus for this really is around groups contributing to their local area in a holistic way, not focused just on one area of interest. But I do acknowledge as well that there are particular types of groups, such as sporting groups, that do contribute in a huge way to the community, although it is quite specific. So my focus, should this be supported, is to be targeted towards community groups that have that holistic approach, but I wouldn't be turning a particular group away if they wanted to come along and contribute. Yeah. Would anyone else like to contribute to the debate? Okay, I don't really feel the need for much of a right of reply. I sort of explained, my reasoning behind it in the background. I guess the only point I'll say is I genuinely think it's quite an exciting opportunity. When I've talked with particular community groups like Imagine Your Adler that I mentioned, they're actually really keen to share their ideas and their knowledge with other groups. And I know, for example, the Lowthill Community Association invited the Gummaraka Main Street group with Chelsea to come along to present her knowledge and her ideas to try and help stimulate what was happening with them. So for me, I think it's a great opportunity, and also for us as an elected body to really understand the community groups better, because I know some very well, others not so much, so it'd be a great opportunity, I think. All right, with the debate closed, all those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. Thank you. We'll move on to item 12.1, which is the Recovery Ready Halls grant. So, Ms. Shepherd, do you have any additional information you'd like to provide to the chamber? Oh, sorry, I'll just wait for... And if no one else can get out of their seat, otherwise we don't have a quorum. So you're not allowed to move now.
No, thank you, Acting Mayor.
Okay, no additional information. I'll just wait for Councillor Munge to exit. Okay, so with no additional information, would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Herman, what would you like to move? As printer, would you like to speak to the item?
Yes, just briefly. I commend this. I found out about this program back in May, and I contacted community halls up in the northern area of the council, and I'm pleased to see that a lot of them did put in applications and have been funded. I did have a question to the administration about two types where the Charleston Community Centre, for argument's sake, is a community group, private, not a council one, whereas Gumaraka is a council funded one. In terms to ownership of an asset, if there's a generator supplied, who would own that asset? I think it's quite clear that in the community halls that the community association that owns the hall and runs the hall is responsible for that. With the council halls, council owned halls, I just wonder if Ms. Shepherd could give an explanation for that. Who is responsible, A, for maintenance of them, B, replacement
Ms. Shepherd. Equipment?
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, with the council-owned facilities, the maintenance of those would be set up in the same way that the lease arrangements are set up with those groups. So if they're responsible for the maintenance of other items in their halls, then they would be responsible for the maintenance of the items such as a generator, etc.
Thank you.
Yes, and I did check with where they weren't fully funded, with a couple of them that weren't fully funded, and they've assured me that they've got the capacity to take up the shortfall. So.
Thank you.
Happy to move it.
Thank you, Councillor Herman. Would someone like to second the motion? Councillor Cheetah.
Thanks, through you, Mayor. Acting Mayor, apologies. I think this is a great opportunity. I was recently able to...
Councillor Herman, if you could turn your microphone.
I was recently able to experience what I call an activation of the Upper Sturt hall recently as part of a quiz night. And it does really remind me about that kind of community activation and what it brings to areas, especially outside of the bushfire, I guess, piece that this came through, but a sort of emerging through the COVID experience we've had recently. And I think we've got some real opportunities, some infrastructure in our council that we should be proud of, and to see the leaders in the community, and this one had quite a young leader involved, was something I thought was dying out. I thought that sort of civic pride of township and town halls and what you can do and facilitate them was starting to be lost. But the vigour of, I think, the people that are involved in these groups and then adding some additional funding is something that it should be celebrated, and definitely something I think we should be supporting. So I support the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Parkin?
Yep, thank you. I would just like to, I guess, agree with what Councillor Cheetah just said, and I think Upper Sturt Hall is a really good example. It's fairly well booked, and there's all different kinds of events there, and it seems fairly well run. But I think, harking back to what Ms. Armstrong sort of shared with us maybe a year ago, maybe a bit longer, many of our other halls suffer from underuse, and there are differing levels of, I guess, management of halls and expertise. So there is huge opportunity there for us, I think, to support our halls in different ways. And actually, I've been thinking about it, and I might talk to you guys moving forward about potentially finding ways to make it easier for our halls to book things, look at different, you know, centralized booking programs, things like that, which might make it easier for people. So I think there are opportunities there. I think this is just a beginning, and there are other things we could do with our many, many, many halls. So yeah, I'd like to commend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Parkin. Councillor Gill.
Thank you, through you, Acting Mayor. I'd like to support this motion. Our halls, as having been a previous committee member of the Kersbrook Hall, a lot of them do struggle to get funds and to actually keep going and to pay their bills. So this is a really good opportunity for them to actually have a focus to be set up as recovery centres sort of afterwards of any emergency, but also to be a hub for the community before any emergency where they, people can go and actually get engaged with their community. So I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Gill. Would anyone else like to speak to the motion? Is it going to help make a decision?
Not as much a decision, just some understanding.
Sure, make it brief.
In light of your motion 10.1, would you consider halls and operators of halls in those community groups as part of that coming together?
Well, it's not really relevant to this item, but what I will say is, just reiterating what I said previously, my intent and focus is on community groups that are looking holistically at a local area. Halls are generally very specific to that building, but I would not be thinking the administration would be turning community groups away if they're wanting to engage with us to share information. Councillor Herman, would you like a write or reply? Yeah,
yes, thank you for the support around the chamber. Just a parting comment would be that I think the committee will be pleased that the money has been spread between community halls, two community halls, and council-owned halls. I think that's a good way to go.
Thank you, Councillor Herman. With the debate closed, all those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. So we'll just wait for Councillors Selwood and Mudge to come back into the room. All right, so we will now move on to item 12.2, the preliminary end of year financial results and carry forwards. With Ms. Packer not here, Mr. Crackett, do you have any additional information you'd like to supply to the chamber?
Yes, if I could through the chair. This matter did find its way through to Audit Committee last night, and Councillor Herman and obviously Councillor Selwood were present in that and would most probably give an update. I can confirm that the Audit Committee did move, other than receiving and noting the report, to also note to Council that the changes to the 23-24 budget as a result of the proposed carry forward amounts will result in financial sustainability indicators within Council's agreed targets as follows, and then they were listed.
Thank you very much. Would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Herman.
As presiding member, I will move that. Move the recommendation. There were, and the report outlines the unders and overs and ups and downs and the movements, but the important point to note for the council is point three, which is the financial stability ratios. Although there's been movement, they still remain within the range. And that's the key issue that the Audit Committee concerns itself with. So I move that recommendation.
Thank you. Would someone like to second something? Councillor Selwood, would you like to speak to the motion? Would anyone else like to contribute? Councillor Grant.
Yeah, thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just a couple of comments. Very pleased to see the operating surplus ratio in the healthy range. People recall we were routinely around or under 1%, which I think is insufficient. I think over 2% is excellent. the net financial liabilities ratio. I know we've got a target from 25 to 75%. I've always wondered about that. I always think the target's as low as possible. And there's often the argument that carrying debt improves intergenerational equity. I don't know whether that's true, especially if we're going to leave an uninhabitable planet. Maybe there's very little intergenerational equity. I think we should think about what debt we have and how much equity it does or doesn't provide to the following generations. But anyway, I think it's a good budget and I'll support the motion.
Thanks, Councillor Grant. Sounds like you've got some discussion points for next budget and not LTFP processes. Would anyone else like to contribute to the debate? Yeah, Councillor Mudge.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I would like to make a comment about those targets. The reason why we have targets is because we don't believe that debt in itself is a negative thing. Sometimes you need to borrow to do good things. You need to invest in your community. The reason why we have the targets is so that we can keep it in a sustainable control. And in fact, that's why you have a lower target as well, because if you're not investing properly in your community, you're actually failing in your role. So I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Mudge. Would anyone else like to contribute? Councillor Herman, do you need a reply?
No, there's general support in the chamber. I think in terms of Councillor Grant's comments, I understand what he's saying. I think the more appropriate time to consider that, those ranges, is at the long-term financial plan and ABP plan preparation. So if you could bring those forward, Councillor Grant, at that day, great.
Okay, with the debate closed, all those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. So we'll move on to item 12.3. So within this item, which is with regard to the appointment of a council member to the Adelaide Hills Reconciliation Working Group, we have two motions, or two decisions that are in the agenda. What I would like to do before moving decision one, or having you contemplate that item, I'd like to get an indication of who is interested in putting their hand up for being the member of that Reconciliation Working Group, because if there's only one, we don't necessarily need to adjourn the meeting. So who has an interest in, so Councillor Mudge, anyone else? No? And just to confirm, Councillor Boyd, you're still happy to be the proxy? Sure. Okay, so then with that in mind, the only decision that does need to be endorsed is point one of decision two, and that is to appoint Councillor Leith Mudge to the Reconciliation Working Group. So I'll just wait for that to come up on the screen. So if we can just add Councillor Leith Mudge to point one, and we can delete point two, because Councillor Boyd will remain as the proxy. Okay, would someone like to move something? Councillor Gill, as on the screen. Thank you. Councillor Boyd to second. Would anyone like to contribute to the debate? All those in favour to please indicate. And those against. That is carried unanimously. Thank you very much, Councillor Mudge. We look forward to hearing about how things go. Okay, from here we're moving on to item 12.4, the review of the accredited professionals policy. Ms. Atkinson, do you have anything you'd like to add for the chamber to consider with this item?
No, Your Mayor, just as presented.
Thank you. Would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Mudge, what would you like to remove? Move, not remove.
As printed, thank you, Acting Mayor.
Thank you. Would you like to, don't need to speak?
Look, this is just a really simple just update to the policy, I believe. It's a requirement for members of the council assessment panel, and also I believe planning staff to have certain levels of accreditation, and this is our implementation of that policy. So I commend the motion.
Would someone like to second? Councillor Grant, would you like to contribute to the debate at all?
No, I've got nothing to add, thanks.
Thanks. Would anyone else like to contribute? I assume no need for a right of reply, so all those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously as well. So we'll now move on to item 12.5, Code of Practice for Access to Council and Council Committee and Information or Briefing Session Meetings and Documents. Nice lengthy document or title for a document. So Ms. Grimes, do you have any additional information you'd like to supply to the Chamber? Nothing further. Would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Someone needs to move something. Councillor Mudge, would you like to move the item?
Yeah. Look, I've,
as printed.
I've actually got a question, but okay. I will move it as printed as well. This is a question in relation to correspondence that occurs out of resolutions of the council. So we often will have motions which ask the mayor to write or the CEO to write to a government minister or this member of parliament or whatever. One of the things that I've always thought we should be doing is when that actually happens, unless there's actually a good reason to keep it in confidence, for that actual correspondence to be distributed to all of the elected members and also be made available to the public. My question is, would that be the sort of thing that we would put into this sort of code of practice?
Ms. Grimes?
Generally, no. That would be an administrative step outside of the code of practice. The code of practice is generally about access to meetings, when we exclude public, etc. But that's certainly something that administration could do as an action following meetings.
Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you.
No worries. And I would say, I guess, generally speaking, we do get provided, as an elected body, the letter that gets sent, typically when that does occur, and the response. Would someone like to second? Councillor Cheetah, would you like to speak to the item?
No, thank you.
So would anyone else like to contribute to the debate? Okay, no need of right of reply. All those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. So 12.6, the delegations was removed. So we'll address that in the following meeting. So we'll move on to item 13.1, the quarterly report. I don't think Ms. Laverty is here, but does staff have any additional information they'd like to provide? No, thank you. Would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Gill, would you like to speak to the item?
Just move as printed.
Thank you. Anyone like to second the item? Councillor Grant, do you like to contribute at all?
No, nothing to add, thank you.
Councillor Mudge.
I had a question in relation to this, and the appropriate person might not be here to answer it, but it's in relation to the legend at the bottom of the pages. Some of the pages have a tick mark on track, as a status of something, and then on other ones it's got an arrow going to the right which say continuing in 2023-24. I'm just wondering why some of those particular projects we don't actually have some sort of status as to whether they're on track or whether they're behind schedule or there's difficulties or something like that.
Sure. Mr. Miller?
Through you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Councillor Mudge. And a very similar question was asked at the Audit Committee last night, so you would have been in very good company had you been there. And the explanation that was given was that the projects that you're referring to, which have the on-track legend, are those major projects that we do the enhanced reporting with. Most of those projects actually span over the financial year, and so they are on track and they are on schedule. However, they're spanning the financial year. Most of the other projects where we've identified the continuing to 23-24 were projects that were meant to be done in the one financial year and for whatever reason are not, and the reasons are generally given, were not quite completed. So it's indicating that it is not finished, but there is an intention to finish it off early this financial year.
Thank you. Good question. Any Councillor Herman?
Yes. I'd just like to draw members' attention to page 145, which is the saving strategies which Council approved in its ABP last year. You may recall that $650,000 was identified as savings, and the table at the back is very good in the fact that we have achieved the administration has achieved $624,000. There's still some more money to come at the end of the year when the leave management carryovers are calculated, so Mr. Crackett assured us that the $650,000 will be met. The other point was made at the Audit Committee, or just noted at the Audit Committee, the electronic rate notices. We plan to have 4,500 and we've achieved 2,585, so it's down a bit. That needs to have a bit of work on it. But it's quite a difficult subject to tackle because it does require the ratepayer to go into the system. Our rate staff encourage people to pay electronically, but they still have to keep encouraged. So the staff are aware that the Audit Committee is looking at that one to see if we can get better results from it. But on another matter which isn't covered here, but electronically, a couple of years ago we had from the Audit Committee a push to have everyone pay their bills electronically, forget the rates, just your normal creditors. Debtors. And I asked the question last night about it, and I was very pleased, and the committee was very pleased with the outcome. The staff told us everyone now pays electronically, and that includes the big ones that were causing a bit of a problem, like say SA Power Networks, AGL, and particularly SA Water, where we have say 300 bills because they bill each connection. And Mr. Crackett, you might like to tell us how you achieved to get SA Water to pay their bills electronically.
If I could, through the Chair, fairly simply really it was a case of not paying the bill until we had an electronic means of paying it. And we did obviously talk at length with those organisations to get that. And they, you know, it's a really good outcome. I'm not sure if it's an outcome for others as well, but to not have a single check leave this building is quite an achievement, I think, considering where we were at the start of the pandemic.
Thank you, Mr. Crackett. And Councillor Herman, you made a really important point about the electronic rates notices. I would have thought we'd have more people on board by now, but we can look into that.
I won't. Can I ask a question? I don't want it's a rhetorical one. I presume everyone in this chamber, apart from Mr. Miller, who doesn't live in the council area, Mr. going around anyone, all those ratepayers around this table, I hope you've availed yourself of the opportunity to pay electronically.
Well, I can confirm that I have, Councillor Herman, but yes. I won't go around the table, okay? Would anyone else like to contribute to the debate for this item? No need for a right of reply, I assume. So with the debate closed, all those in favour to please indicate. Those against, that is carried unanimously. So we'll move on to item 13.2 now, the service review by annual report civil services. Mr. Miller, do you have any additional information you'd like to provide to the chamber?
Thank you. Through you, your chair. This was also committed at the considered at the audit committee last night, and there were a few queries, particularly by the independent members, to get a better understanding of the service review process and civil services. But no, I don't have any additional information to add.
Would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Boyd, would you like to move as printed? Do you need to speak? Someone like to second it? Councillor Mudge, would you like to speak to the item?
Look, I've got a question and I'd like to speak to it if I could. I guess my question is in relation to, I think it was five actions which were scheduled for completion on the 30th of June this year. And the question is, particularly the high priority ones, why weren't they completed?
Mr. Miller, do you know what it is? Mr. Bice, yep.
through your worship. Thanks, Councillor Mudge. Yep, so there were a number that weren't completed. That was largely due to 20% of the employees leaving the organisation during that period. The elevated pricing in the construction industry has had quite an impact on wages in private sector as compared to local government, and so we had quite a number that were just simply offered an offer too good to refuse, and they subsequently left, and that's left one manager, the manager of civil services, to try and juggle quite a lot of a workload, and even simple additional tasks prove quite difficult to accomplish. So it's actually done well to make some progress through to this point. What we could do, though, to improve the reporting next time around is not just have planned date, as in originally planned date, but perhaps look at if there are any amendments to a future target date to ensure that things aren't being kicked down the road, so to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. And did you want to contribute to the debate, Councillor Mudge?
I think these sorts of reviews and the action plans that come out of them are really important. I think it's really important that we track our progress against them, and that we do make sure, as an elected body, that we hold the administration to account, particularly when they're the ones who are coming up with the plan for actioning the actions that were the recommendations out of the report and stuff. And I do accept that you had resources issues and stuff. I think it'd be useful. When that does happen is and maybe even now, if we had something which was how we're going to recover that, and you know, you've already suggested one, which is this is the date we're now committing to when it's going to happen, and this is, you know, we're going to get some more people on board and throw some more resources to it, because one thing that members may not, particularly the new members, may not be aware is service reviews have been prioritised based on the areas of the council services that we believe are the most important, the highest risk, and that we want to try and get them correct, get them right, and we want to try and improve the way that we deliver those services as well. So when we spend time and money on doing reviews, I think it's really important that we actually track and make sure that the recommendations that come out of those reviews are actually actioned properly. So I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Mudge. Would anyone else like to contribute? Is that your hand up, Councillor Grant? Yep.
Yeah, thank you, Deputy Mayor. I certainly support the motion, and I support this sort of review. I think it's an excellent way to look at how these services have been provided. In the future, I'd like to think we could go a little bit deeper into the actual services delivered, the demand for those services, and how that demand's assessed, or how that need is assessed, the value for money that we're getting from providing that service, and the level at which we want to provide the various services. So actually take a step back and saying, how much of what we're doing, you know, and this will assess how efficiently we do it, which of course is important, but how many of those services are needed? How do we know, you know, what the community want? Some things we know intuitively, well, we think we do. Some things we just assume that, well, this is what the community want, and maybe we've never really asked. So I think that's another scratching the surface of community needs would be a really good different form of service review, and I'm sure we'll get to that in time, but anyway, I support the motion as it is.
Quite a holistic approach which we could put in place for future reviews. Would anyone else like to contribute to the debate? All right, Councillor Boyd, no need for right of reply. The debate closed. All those in favour to please indicate. Those against? That is carried unanimously. So that's it for information items. We'll move on to questions without notice. Does anyone have a question without notice, Councillor Herman?
Only one tonight.
Only one. Okay, fire away.
And I'll preface my question just to advise the council that there was yet another accident at the corner of Warren, Lucky Hit and Martin Hill Roads yesterday. One person was injured and taken to hospital. Ambulance and police attended, therefore public resources being used, in addition to the CFS, of course. I didn't attend, by the way. So my question, progress report, please, on the making safer the intersection of Warren, Martin Hill and Lucky Hit Roads, Forreston.
Thanks, Councillor Herman. Mr. Byers?
Through you, Worship. Thanks, Councillor Herman. The update will be very similar to previous, wherein the discussions are occurring with the Native Vegetation Council in regards to clearance and negotiations with landholders in relation to land acquisition.
Any other questions without notice? Moving on to motions without notice. I haven't had anything flagged with me. Is there any motions without notice? No. So we'll go on to item 16, which are a report. 16.1, Council Member Function or Activity on the Business of Council. Does anyone have anything specific they need to raise in relation to that? No. Okay, 16.2, reports of members, officers as council representatives on external organisations. So, Councillor Herman, you've got a couple of points there. Do you need to raise
anything? No, I don't need to talk to them. The papers, the final report and the annual statements will come to the council for adoption and inclusion in the annual report. There is a confidential matter discussed. I'll just let you know that that's still there and that will come back to council at some stage.
Look forward to it. Moving on to item 16.3, the CEO report.
Sure, thank you, and to the acting mayor. Current focus for this period is staff unification and engagement strategy, also looking at the organisational structure, looking at better ways to engage with our community, so working with the team on that, dusting off the boundary reform proposal and seeing if we can act on the motion that council moved a little while ago about doing a bit more of a detailed study around the proposal and unpacking that and then reporting back to council. Looking at environmental, the potential of the of this region, and we've been putting some of those initiatives in the country cabinet document, and also the economic potential, similarly looking at including some of those in the country cabinet document and broaching the ministers around that. And of course, progressing the councillors' champions initiative as well. So working around the framework and reporting back to council over the next few weeks on that one. That's all at this stage.
Thank you, CEO. Does anyone have any questions in relation to the report? No, we'll move on to item 17.1. So there were some council assessment panel minutes for the 9th of August 2023. Would someone like to move as printed, Councillor Mudge? Yep. And a seconder, Councillor Cheetah. All those in favour to please indicate. Thanks. Those against, that is carried unanimously. So the audit committee, whilst they did meet last night, we don't have the minutes in this agenda, so that'll be addressed next meeting. COPRP did not meet, nor did the Boundary Change Commission. We have no confidential items. Our next meeting is on the 12th of September here at 6:30 p.m., and I'll close the meeting at 7:47. Thanks very much.